All right, welcome to Film Shake. This is episode 1.5, where we're going to get into a little bit of the spoilers for Ugetsu Monogatari that we couldn't talk about on our previous episode, which was spoiler-free. So definitely go check that one out if you haven't seen the film yet. And you can listen now if you have seen the film. Here we go with some of the spoilers from 1953's Ugetsu Monogatari. So the spoilers that I was thinking about talking about are, obviously Lady Wakasa, who's a spirit from the dead, and then also Genjuro returns home in what I believe is the key scene of the film, where we discover that Miyagi really is dead, or there's a question, at least for a moment there, is she really a ghost?
And the film kind of teases you for a second there, too. It's, which obviously he's like played with like perspective and if what I'm seeing real or not throughout the movie,
right?
Which we couldn't really talk about when we were doing non-spoilers.
Yeah.
But, you know, like there's hints like something's off with Lady Wakasa, but then whenever it's like, this was all fantasy. Even the house that she lived in burned to the ground years ago and wasn't even there.
Which, again, was just amazing moment of how he blends the reality and the surreal, where we've been inhabiting this surreal space and in this time where he's at that manor with Lady Wakasa. And, you know, he gets the Buddhist monk to write the prayers on his body, and then she's kind of repelled by that, and he has been told this is a spirit, you know, this is gonna kill you, pretty much, you need to get out of there.
I love that monk, by right? the way.
That was great. That was such a great scene. Later when he's at the house with Lady Wakasa and her female servant, like her lady-in-waiting, and they're like literally like holding on to him, like, no, you can't go, and he's like, let me go home, you know. They're like, no, you can't go. And then I love how as he picks up that sword and he's striking at him, like, again, as he never hits them, he never even comes close, but it definitely feels like, okay, he's just swinging at the air, you know, and then they just kind of slowly fade off back
into the lighting. Is flickering like something is dying or being driven out.
Yeah, and they go off into the dark. We don't, like, ever see them again. They just kind of, like, I don't know if they're, I guess they're walking backwards. It almost feels like they're floating. Mm-hmm. Where they just kind of like float back into the background and disappear into the darkness. And then he goes out into the courtyard, like, and slashing at everything and just passes out. And I love that reveal when he wakes up and the soldiers are kind of manhandling him because they feel like he's stolen the sword. You know, he's like, oh, I got this from the manor. And they're like, that manor burnt down like months ago. And then we pan over and we just see those charred blackened beams from the manor. That was such a beautiful moment, and in imagery I was almost tempted to want the film to end right there on that note,
you know? Without closure for
without any closure else, but just so tragic. Well,
the thing about that scene too is that there's like 20 minutes of film left afterward,
right?
And you're kind of put in a position there where, well, what is real, and everything that comes after that, who's a ghost, who's not a ghost? Because when we're reintroduced to the wives, obviously one of them is no longer alive, and he's with a ghost, which is, help me with names. I'm so bad with names in my own
Miyagi,
native tongue of English.
His wife?
Yeah. So Miyagi, whenever they meet up again in his home, she's passed away.
Yeah.
She died on the road earlier in the scene where she's trying to protect, their child, and, you know, she's getting beaten up.
That's the documentary shot that I was talking about.
That's right.
In that, it's so brutal, and how they steal her food, and they spear her, and then she's just dying in the foreground, but we see them in the background just eating and kind of cutting
up. And they themselves are pathetic. Like, they're very, very run. It's not much of a victory for them to get whatever food that she had.
Yeah.
But something that I thought was interesting, and I look for it immediately as soon as they reunited, because, again, like, the lighting and the camera movement is more of this impressionistic style. Whenever he goes back home and he and his wife and son are reunited, that I immediately thought, well, he has this writing written on him to repel spirits away.
Hmm.
Are they going to touch? And I don't think that they do. I think when he goes to lie down, she doesn't lie down next to him and touch him. Instead, she goes to the hearth.
Yeah, she goes to the sunken hearth and sews the kimono or whatever that he brought back, which, man, I love that scene. Talking about the Eye of the Duck. I guess we should set this up for listeners. The Eye of the Duck is a term from David Lynch that he coined about the key ingredient or key moment of a movie. And he makes some kind of weird comparison to the eye in a duck is like the jewel of the animal, and it like everything comes together in the eye. If there was no eye in the duck, there wouldn't be a duck or something like that.
That sounds like him.
It sounds like David Lynch.
No, I'm just kidding. He's fine.
But yeah, talking about that key scene, I really love that scene where he comes back and he enters the house once and it's barren and you know, no one's there and everything's broken. And the camera, again, all in one shot where he goes through the house and goes out of the house and he goes around the house. And when he comes back in and the camera pans over, Miyagi, his wife, has appeared and she's at the hearth and the fire is lit and all seems to be well. But obviously, as a viewer, we kind of have a question of, is this real? Is she really there? Is she not a ghost? And of course, I feel like you almost know that she's not, but the filmmaker wants you, it makes you want her to be there and be alive.
Mm-hmm. And like everything's okay.
And there's no hint at all within that scene where, other than that pan, you know, where first she's not there and then all of a sudden she's there.
Yeah.
It just proceeds after that with, you know, them meeting and Genjiro seeing his boy again and she's, you know, at the hearth and I don't know, she's cooking or doing some sort of house duties. And then he falls asleep and then we have that shot that just stays on her at the hearth and she's sewing the kimono. I'm thinking it's the kimono that he brought back from, that he bought for Lady Wakasa. Is it not? It looked like the same thing.
I'm not sure.
If it is, I thought that was an amazing, a powerful moment of she's sewing up the tears that he's created in their marriage, in their life, you know, and later on as a ghost, as a spirit, or no, even in that moment, she says, she doesn't want to hear what horrible thing he's done. He's almost confessing to her and she's like, no, it's okay. You know, let's move on, that kind of thing. But it stays on that shot of her sewing and then it just cuts to the morning, the morning after, outside of the house. And that just jolted me because I was so hypnotized by that moment, just wondering.
You know she's not going to be there
yeah,
now.
Yeah, you know it for sure. But I was just totally enraptured in that scene where, is she there or not?
And it was a bit of a twist that his son was not a ghost. But I do believe in the scene that he does pick up his sleeping son and hold him, which maybe I'm reading too much to him still having the writing, the spirit-repelling writing on his skin.
Yeah.
But if I'm recalling correctly, he embraces his son, and again, his wife, and he never touch.
I need to rewatch it. I don't know if they touch or not.
I don't think they do. I think he immediately goes to his son, and she's just kind of there.
Okay.
But
you that know, would make sense, yeah, with the spirit thing.
Yeah, and if that's not what happens, then he probably just waded through a river and it got washed off of him, right? Which
if they do touch, it would make sense with the logic of the film because obviously he's touching Lady Wakasa, who's a spirit all throughout. So at the end, it wouldn't be a far reach for him to hug his wife and actually interact with her physically.
He doesn't touch Lady Wakasa after he gets the writing on him, right?
No.
Like she's repelled by him.
Yeah, right. Yeah, but I mean like as a spirit, that she's still like physically there in a way, which I thought was interesting.
Okay, gotcha.
You know, she's not just like an ephemeral ghost.
Yeah.
Then that's that blending of the real with the
her netherworld actions have consequences in the actual world.
Right.
Since he was in mortal peril whenever he was with her, according to the monk.
Yeah, and I love right after that monk scene where he goes back and she's like, "We need, you know, I never want you to leave again. We need to go away to my native land."
Yeah,
my native land.
That was great.
Right, the netherworld. Yeah,
it's awesome.
I love how they land don't spell that out there, yeah. But it's totally
that
implied.
Was brilliant. That gave me chills. It gave me chills again when you said it. I forgot about that.
Yes,
that was awesome.
That whole scene, man, is so. so chilling and so, I don't know, horrific. With, you can just feel this man going insane too, where he's slashing out with the sword, and how there's just these spirits, you know, like attacking him and drawing him into. You can feel the how close he is to death there, that he could just be pulled in and die.
It's crazy, though, with this movie, which I think is why it's so substantial, is that, again, it's like, oh, this heroic guy is fighting these spirits and everything's going to be okay. But, again, it's not like he is having this crazy adventure. But, you know, his wife, meanwhile, is being murdered. Because he's not with her, you know, because he's abandoned their family.
Right.
And she's having to do everything on his own. So it's like you're getting like this fanciful, like, quote unquote, spiritual warfare, you know. But then meanwhile, back in the real world, like bad things are happening because of him. He doesn't just get to like escape the spirits and like, oh, everything's all right.
Well,
now.
Yeah. And
it's
and
all
the,
good.
And the way he escapes, too, is totally manic and not
very cowardly.
Yeah. Very cowardly, not postured heroically at
not
all.
Not at
all.
He's not. He doesn't just raise his swords and say, I damn you back to hell, you know, and like chop her head off.
No.
Like, he's very terrifyingly swinging the sword, you know, scared out of his mind.
Yeah, and there's no swordsmanship. Yeah, there's no swordsmanship there either. He's just blindly like slashing. Yeah, and then he just faints in the courtyard. So yeah, he's definitely a coward. Well, thinking about another scene that maybe we didn't get to touch on as much as we'd like to earlier. What about the rape scene with Ohama? We have Tobai, her husband, running off to buy the samurai armor and spear and sword. And she's chasing him through the marketplace and ends up kind of in a deserted area, like out by the shore, runs into some soldiers, and they quickly snatch her up and bring her back to, I guess, what looks like a deserted manor and have their way with her. That, to me, that was, like you said, there's the supernatural horror here, but there's those almost implied horrors with the realism. I mean, obviously, not all are... All of it is implied. We have some very realistic war scenes and with Miyagi's death. But there I felt like it was tastefully done, but it made it just, you know, having her coming out of the manor as they're, you know, they've left and after they've kind of beat on their drums and laughed and sang or whatever.
It's clear what happened, but at the same time, there's nothing titillating about it at all.
Yeah.
And it's still horrific.
Yeah, and then they throw the money at her.
Oh, that was awful.
That was so harsh and awful. But it almost to me made me think about a comparison with the men with our heroes Genjuro and Tobai, how they're seeking the fortune, you know, and how there's this kind of view of money in the film, how, you know, the quick gain is a terrible thing, is seen as a negative, and to me, it seemed like there was maybe a comparison there, where, like, you know, they're throwing this money at her and the film is making some sort of comment to show how like dirty money is, you know?
Yeah, because it's just like insulting. Like they really just do it as like a final like insult to injury,
right?
Because it's like they don't even care about it. They just throw it at her to degrade her more. It means nothing to them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't think about that.
So it's weird how money there can degrade you. Like this situation's already a degrading moment, but the that's kind of like the last straw. So like they throw the money at her and that just, for some reason that just makes it all the more worse.
Yeah.
You know, like you've become a whore now. You weren't just like an innocent woman rape. Like we're going to pay for this like against your will, and that to me it's all the more defiling, and it sets up for her to become a prostitute later in the film at the negligence of her husband.
That's right. And then for her husband to visit the very brothel that she's, you know, at, which he's flattered into going to because, you know, he's riding down the main street of the town, like in this processional, like a rooster. I'm pretty sure the actor had to have like studied how roosters walk, the way he's like strutting around.
Yeah. Once his posture totally changes after he becomes that great samurai.
Yeah.
Right.
And you know, the brothel owner comes out and tries to get him to come in and he's like, no, I don't have time for that. But then she's like, but you're such a great and wonderful samurai. You must.
Yeah. And
you
know, all his men are like, oh, we deserve it. Think of your men, you know? And he's like, No, I'm on my way to see a very important person. You know,
which he meant his wife.
Yeah, which he meant
to show her, like, look how awesome I right. am, dummy.
Yeah, again,
I told you I'd be a samurai.
Exactly, and then the irony and the tragedy of him going in to find his wife as a geisha girl there. You know,
which
and it was expected, but it was like it was well earned, and it was just I don't know, such good plotting. You know, even though some of these elements you might be able to predict, you know, far off, like obviously their greed's going to get them in trouble, obviously his desire for fame is going to, you know, bring, you know, terrible fate upon his family. But I just thought it was so well done, and how you know, that long shot of at first she's kind of fighting with this man who's going to run out on her and not pay her for her services, and then his gape mouthed stare at her like, oh, I can't believe it's actually you, you know?
Yeah.
This is the woman that I wanted to come back and boast to, but now he kind of sees what he's done, and
he's humbled.
He's humbled, yeah.
Yeah.
What about that last shot that we were kind
of
talking about?
Yeah, that's exactly what I wanted to talk about. I was trying to link it into some kind of Eye of the Duck scenario, but I don't know if it really fits, but I really want to talk about it.
Yeah.
So the final shot is that the men are back home with the one surviving wife. Forgive me, my name.
Ohama.
My name escapes me. So her name definitely escapes me.
Your name is Nick.
Okay.
Nicholas.
And her name is?
Ohama.
Ohama. So Ohama has survived. You know, she's kind of like, feels like the leader. I mean, she obviously has the moral high ground, but she definitely is like in a position of respect now.
Yeah.
At least among the two men who have come back home and have returned to their roles. So they're both working hard in the field, which we never see. We never see Ohana's husband working legitimately. I feel like before he's just kind of goofing around, but he's right. actually hard at work. Like maybe he learned his lesson. He's going to be a better man now. Both men are working.
Yeah.
And she goes and brings food.
Right. She's the one feeding them, you know. So, again, a place of a higher place of a higher ground, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. They're like hunched over and she's standing.
Yeah.
And she brings the food out and it gets brought to the sun. So, for me, the most moving part of the movie and what really brought it together for me is that he picks the food up and you think he's going to start eating. And then it's like, well, how's this movie going to end? And then he runs, you know, to the right off of the frame, and the mm-hmm. camera tracks over, and he goes to his mother's grave and he offers the food up to her,
right.
Which is again what I thought was maybe like kind of the director's hopeful nod maybe towards the future, because instead of greedily taking the food and slopping it up, he brings it over to the mother's grave and he offers it, and then, you know, the last shot is kind of like the smoke from the offering rising up into the sky.
Right, and the camera pans up to see the fields and the workers out there, you know, toiling away.
And it's kind of like this harmonious shot, like yeah. that this is how it's meant to be.
Right.
You know, they're not fighting anymore, which, man, we could get into like a... I'm thinking of like... I'm not going to go there. I'm not going to go where I want to go. But anyway, it's a society living harmoniously
right.
together.
It's definitely a contrast to the beginning with the war ravaged land, you know, and this is them kind of picking up the pieces and being content, I think, is the element there that I'm drawn to is, again, you said it, but I didn't really think about it yet. The son doesn't greedily take up the food and eat it all for himself,
father through the whole movie, anytime they bring him food, it kind of grossed me out. He is just like slopping anything brought to him down.
Yeah.
Like,
and a real 3 or 4 year old would definitely be digging into that bowl with their hands and making a mess. But yeah, he offers it to the mother on the grave. And I think it honors her spirit where, you know, I love that voiceover too, that we get from Miyagi, you know, it was an interesting choice, and I think it worked really well, where we get mm-hmm. her voice from the grave talking to Genjuro, and you almost kind of can assume that he's hearing that or he's feeling her presence with him, and how she's just saying, you know, it's okay, you know, you can, I'm glad to see that you finally changed and that you know, I'm happy to see you become the man you've become. Even though it's kind of bitter that I'm no longer among the living anymore. But yeah, you definitely sense that same contentment and that, you know, maybe there's a longing there now because she's not physically with them, but it's like, I'll always be by your side. I'm with you in spirit, that kind of thing. So I definitely love that he made that choice to have those characters, those female characters in that way. Even though, like I said, sometimes it feels like the men get off a little too easy.
Yeah. But I'm glad you men learned your lesson. I'm dead now, but I mean, I'm glad you guys are okay.
Yeah.
Good job, guys. Yeah. it's all about the guys.
It's all about the guys, yeah. Even in this very female-centered, you know, portrayal of women's suffering, it does kind of end with the guys there. I do like how you said Ohama is on kind of the moral high ground and... you know, she in herself seems to progress because I feel like in the beginning she is a little bit more shrewish. She's definitely harsh with Tobai and calling him the village idiot and throwing him on the ground.
Admittedly, he is.
Yeah. But she in a way seemed, I guess maybe now that they've seen the error of their ways, she is calmed down with that a little bit and she can back off and just kind of feed them. And he's working hard and she says, you don't want to take a rest and come eat or something like that. You know, she's encouraging him to stop, but he keeps working. So I thought that was a nice moment as well.
Again, I kind of wonder with cultural differences, like you definitely, you have a male character who's more just, I don't want to say your stereotypical male, but, you know, he's at least got it together enough to where like his fall from grace, you know, is painful. But then you have this goofy village idiot character. I wonder how much of his inclusion was for humor for the Japanese audience of the time and how much was like an intentional, like, here's a portrayal of a type of person.
Right. Because we didn't really touch on this. You know, this is based on two Japanese folklore stories from Ueda in the Tales of Moon and Rain. But that Tobai character and his pursuit of the samurai status comes from a different short story from Guy de Maupassant's Décoré, which has like a similar arc to it. So yeah, I love how Mizoguchi takes all these different stories, like there's one short story from that collection by Ueda that is just about like a ghost wife. And then there's another about like the demonic spirit noblewoman lady seductress, and he combined those two plus the other short story with Tobai's seeking the samurai status, seeking glory, and he just weaves all three of those plots together so seamlessly. It's
you'd never know there were different
right.
Things.
You would never know. Yeah, it's so well done. All right. Well, on that note, that's our spoiler episode, and check back next time as we get into the life of Oharu. I'm sure there'll be some spoilers there we'd like to talk about.
Yeah, I'm kind of wondering what the themes of that movie were going to be, like if they're always so deep or if it's going to be about something completely different. Now I'm going to be looking for them. I wasn't expecting them in this movie.
I definitely think we'll have some deep territory to mine there just from this one film and reading about Life of Oharu. It's supposed to be a pretty impactful piece of cinema.
Interesting. I guess, you know, the Kurosawa films from this period, not that they're, you know, just total surfacey action romps, but there's not this kind of thematic depth, in my opinion. There's definitely thematic depth, but nothing quite like this. Right. Now, later on, especially with, like, I don't know, I love Ron.
Yeah.
I hope I said it right.
It's so long, but yeah, I love it.
It's so good. Really, the last shot from this kind of reminded me of the last shot from that. I don't want to talk about that too much just in case we ever watch that movie. But something about, I don't know, maybe it's a part of Japanese cinema in general, but there's sort of this pull back to this panorama and this feeling of like ephemerality.
Yeah.
But that's a total different digression that I won't get into. All that to say, I'm interested to see what the themes will be for this movie.
I'm really glad that you picked this film, and it's definitely had a lot to think about and discuss, and I think I'll keep thinking about it. And
we need to watch shallower movies, though. How are we going to keep this to half an hour?
What are we going to do?
So, next week, Armageddon.
Hey, it's in the Criterion Collection.
It is. My mom got that for me when I graduated high school, and I took it back to the store.
Nice.
And I tried to
I don't want this
be
trash.
A jerk about it. Yeah, I was like, Mama, I don't really like this movie very much.
Hey, Steve Buscemi's in it, right?
He is. He's the only bright spot.
The only bright spot. All right, well, that's our show for this month. Check us out next month for an episode on the life of Oharu, like we said. We'll have a spoiler-free episode as well as a spoilers-included episode on that. And if you'd like to contact us, maybe you have some feedback or your own trivia question for us to talk about on the show, email us at filmshakepodcast@gmail.com. Of course, you can find our show and other great shows on 25thframemedia.com. And we have lots of love for our local library. You can check them out, ebrpl.com. We'll see you next time.
And no one showed any pity upon me. No one loved me. I was all alone. Like.